Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Spoiler warning. This is your official spoiler warning. Go to Netflix and watch this show before you listen to us if you don't want spoils.
Peace. I hate the word.
I got thrust, the funk. I got one leg and a bucket of chicken.
Yeah, put a little cornstarch on my werewolf, man.
Luigi Mario.
Welcome to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama. This is a podcast where each week my mate Zach and I have a bit of a chat about something John Leguizamo's been up to in the last 45 years. Sometimes we get sick of each other's company and we invite a friend along to join us. And that's what we've done this week, which is really awesome. My name is Mish Wittrup, and you might know me from a cheeky little web series that came out last week. It's my web series. It's called Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun. And let's be honest, you've already watched it and you're welcome. I'm joined, as always, by my talented friend, but not at my level friend, Zach Ruane, who you might know from.
I did a wonderful turn in the in Internment, which is a very exciting YouTube web series from The Leftovers, a really cool sketch group. You also might know me from Mission Zach's Leguizamarama, and I'm a playwright as well.
And nothing to be scoffed at, Zach.
Your
achievements are valid.
You know what's crazy, Mish? Here we are. You're talking positive. You're talking joyful. You're giving yourself the encouragement. But only when we pretend it's me. Mish, you're allowed to say that you're a success. You're allowed to say that you're a star. We don't need the self-deprecation anymore because
it's hard not to believe that I'm a star when I have a Netflix series. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Anyway, this week we are joined by our very, very good friend. She is the funniest human being on the planet. So talented. She's a comedian. She's a singer. She's a writer. She's an actor. She does it all, and she does it so well. And she is our friend Michelle Brazier.
Hello, I'm a singer and an actor and a writer and a lover and a dreamer, and I love you guys and I love myself.
That's so good.
Welcome.
Thank
you so much.
And now I've binged the whole thing. We've pre-recorded this. We recorded this 2 weeks ago, but I imagine on the 11th, I binged the whole thing. Good to see you did do a little cameo in Mish Wittrup's Big Old House of Fun, which is Mish's little side project to Mission Zach's Leguizamarama. So you did a little cameo, flew over to America and did that. So you were great. You were so funny in it.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
A true highlight of my Netflix experience was having you there with me, Braz.
Oh, it was fantastic to be there on a Mish run set. I mean, it's, you know, she makes a safe space.
I do.
She makes it a great place to work, and I honestly couldn't imagine doing it with anyone else.
Oh, thank you so much.
No worries.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'll just say this right now. It's been a very big week for everyone involved in my Netflix series.
Yeah.
And chances are of Zach and me, Zach and I should say.
You should. I wasn't going to say anything, but I was so mad when you said Zach and me instead of Zach and I.
I was mad too. I was mad.
I was mad at myself. I'm so sorry. The reason I did that is because I'm exhausted. Because out of Zach Ruane and Mish Wittrup, after the week that's been, Mish Wittrup is most likely incredibly tired.
No, that's absolutely true, Mish. You would be very tired right now, I imagine. I'm not. I'm feeling fresh. I haven't done 5 interviews today before this podcast. Where I've repeated the same story about going to acting school and you know, playing the funny parts. We found that we were playing the funny parts and we thought, well, heck, why don't we do this thing full time? And then we won this little award at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival and it all went from there. Yes. So what was your next question?
Oh, God, that sounds so painful.
No, I love it.
I think it sounds great because I love attention. I'm talking about myself.
It was literally, it's so funny, not that it was me. I'm just imagining what your day was like, Mish. And
I feel like 5 interviews a day would be like foreplay for Braz.
Yeah.
Getting and squeezing in 5 interviews in a day.
I love it.
Yeah, that gets Braz randy.
All I need is to be told that I'm good. Yeah. That's it. That's the whole thing.
Isn't it funny that it doesn't matter if a podcast is funny, it doesn't matter if a podcast is serious, it doesn't matter if it's edited or if it's loose. The one, like, and it doesn't matter if it's a podcast or a play or a film, the one, like combining factor in all art is that it was created by narcissists.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter. We're all just like, I want your attention and I'll find an excuse to get it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the 100%. Whole thing.
I remember the first time I was on stage, which is very fitting considering what we're talking about today. Ooh.
There's a little hint the first time if you haven't I was looked on stage, at the title of this podcast.
I was in year 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a musical called The Ragged Child, which is absolutely not appropriate for primary school
kids. No, it sounds awful.
It was about cholera. And there was a sex worker in it.
No.
And I played a drunk widow. So I played a 60-year-old woman whose husband had died and she'd hit the bottle really hard and she was really drunk.
That's okay, so I just want to clarify that I'm picturing you in Annie singing little girls everywhere. Like that's you in my head in a cholera musical.
I wanted to be Miss Hannigan so badly, but I cannot sing. But, yeah, so disappointing. But no.
Well, you sang in The Ragged Child, surely.
I did sing. But because she was drunk, I could be like, all right, and it was fine because I was drunk. Anyway, I remember after doing it, like after the first opening night or whatever, I did my bow and I got a solo bow because I was a lead, whatever. It was pretty cool.
I love
and
a solo bow.
Everyone clapped and cheered for me and I just went, at that age, I was 12 probably. I just went, I want that forever.
Yes, this please.
I want this that please. For always. That just all my friends' mums standing up just being like, she's fabulous. I was like, well, fuck, I'm fucked now. I broke a chain of nurses in my family. Like they've all been nurses. And I went, no, I want middle-aged Ivanhoe mummies to clap for me and stop me down the street to tell me what a wonderful job I did in my primary school play.
That's the move right there. You know what's up. You know how to do it. It's very funny that you got a round of applause for playing drunk because I think I've talked about this on this podcast, but I feel like I don't think very highly of myself as an actor. I don't think it's like my number one strength. I think I've got
no,
other strengths.
Babe, you're great.
You're such a good actor. I saw you in Nicholas Nickleby.
You were great.
You know what? What I would say is there's a whole journey I can go down of me saying I know my strengths, I know my weaknesses, and I'm not putting myself down here. I'm knowing myself, and that's very important. But what I will say, one thing I know about myself with confidence is that I cannot play drunk. I cannot. I think it's the hardest challenge for an actor and it is something I cannot do. I've done it. You can find me playing drunk in like some big opportunities in my career and then you can find the 6-month to 2-year gap in my IMDb after every time I play drunk. It is so hard because the drunk person is wobbly and is drunk, right? That's the number one thing. The number two thing that the drunk person does is do everything in their power to not be drunk. to not appear drunk. It's all about this like double thing of like someone who can't walk but is trying very, very hard to convince you they can walk, and that does not commute for Zach Rowane.
Have you read the Ivana Chubbuck book on this, on one's experiences?
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it's an acting book.
Is it a book on like, how to be a drunk actor?
Well, there's like, I can't remember what it's called, but it's like it has stuff about this and like what to do if your character is on a certain drug that you've never done and like things like that. But yeah, it is all about like not being drunk. But I think playing drunk is easy because I actually think that the number one thing is don't appear drunk. And as soon as you try not to appear drunk, then you do appear drunk, even if you don't have that first layer of like a bit wobbly, a bit funny. If you're focusing on moving like a normal person, you don't move normal. And that's just some philosophy on acting. But I am an actor.
Do you know what I watched the other day? Because this is we're recording this in the middle of we don't know what the world is going to look like in 2 weeks' time. We don't know what the nation where I didn't film. Mish filmed Mish Witrup's big old house of fun.
There's That's a right, lot. Don't of, you forget it.
There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of negativity. There's a lot of worry that core institutions that we've held to our entire life and core concepts are at risk right now. So last night, me and my partner did what we had to do for our mental health, and we watched Bad Neighbours starring Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne.
Yeah,
yes. Just was like, we need to watch something so easy and so funny. Mm. And they, I will say right now, they do some fantastic drunk acting in that film. That's a film you don't think of much if you haven't seen it in the last 3 days. Mm. But like,
I do.
Rose Byrne, like, kills it.
Think about it all the time. I love a Judd Apatow-style romp. Those are my favourite films.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I feel you. That structurally a drama, but tonally a comedy. Is that what we're talking about? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Yep. Have you ever seen Crazy Heart with Jeff Bridges?
No.
Okay. No. That is, in my opinion, the best drunk acting I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart. It is crazy accurate.
How many times do you reckon Bradley Cooper, how many times do you reckon Bradley Cooper watched Crazy Heart before he made Tell Me Something, Girl?
A Star Is Born.
Yeah. I'm happy in this morning. I'm sorry, I really want to do the whole song.
Do that bit.
Oh, what is it again? I pulled it up. It's the uncertainty to Gaga. Like, it's the emotional journey. Yeah, I love that.
I can see that was sitting in your bones, and it was really important to give you an opportunity.
Oh, but
to get
I had
out.
To get. But I also, what's the? There's the other one. Oh no, that is the song. There's no other song in that. Is there?
No, there's that one that's like at the end. I'll never love again. Oh, I'll never love again. That one. It's at the end.
I've never seen this film.
Haven't you seen The Star Is Born? It's
never seen it. I yelled at everyone. I yelled at everyone to watch it. I was like, it's going to be amazing. I love Gaga.
If you wait like 10 years, they'll do another remake and you could be in it.
I could be in it.
Do you know, this is really interesting, right? Before this version, because it's now just become a thing. It's like it's every 20 years there's a Star Is Born. It kind of is like Hamlet or anything else is just a version of this story.
Mm.
There was a version, I think, kind of cooking before this one that was Clint Eastwood directed and starring Will Smith and Beyoncé.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Wouldn't that have been an interesting one? I think Absolutely. A really good one. Fuck, that would have been great.
Do you know that for a while There was a moment, I think in the early noughties,
mm-hmm.
where they were going to do a remake of Dirty Dancing starring Jennifer Lopez.
No.
I would have loved that. I loved Jennifer Lopez growing up. I loved Jennifer Lopez. She was so good. She is so good.
We are both named Michelle.
Mm-hmm.
We are both vegan. We both live on the same street. Mm. We are both blonde.
Mm-hmm.
We both enjoy the comedy.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't share is a love for the concept of that film.
I love that. I love it. I think they should have done it.
That film, Jennifer Lopez playing baby in Dirty Dancing, sounds like a fucking dumpster fire.
What are you talking about? How? She's Jennifer Lopez. She's the best. She's the best woman in the world. What are you talking about?
She's like too good. There's no like reveal there. Like, that's about a girl coming out of her shell. Like the
what are you talking about? Nicole Kidman wore a fake nose for the hours. All kinds of things can happen. She
like leaks star quality. The moment, the idea of Jennifer Lopez.
She plays clumsy. She does a movie where she plays clumsy.
Sure, like, but just like, I'm shy. I can't dance. No, I'm shy. I don't want to dance with you. Oh. That's crazy.
Do you think maybe we should launch into the blurb about what we're here to fucking talk about?
I would love to say that Jennifer Lopez, I exclaimed about making it like clear to you guys that this is a fantastic segue to get into exactly what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And you chose to dump on her and her Dirty Dancing.
No. To be very clear, unless it was a gender swap and she was playing the Patrick Swayze part.
Okay, that would have been amazing.
Then I'm on board. Then I'm here for that. Cool. She was great in that Hustlers as well. Jennifer,
she was so good.
Yeah, like that was a real moment for me of like, oh, she's great.
Mm.
So this week we thought it would be a good idea because Mish, you have a Netflix show out.
Yes, let's say that as often as possible because if we say it enough, it'll come true. Go on.
Please, it's Netflix. It'll come true. They're looking for content. They just they love to make shows.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm trying to be like,
if there's one thing they love to do, it's make shows.
They love to make a show.
I'm trying to be like, I don't know. Anyway, my point is, I would hope that all of our listeners, because they're very hardcore Mish, like because they're Auntie Donna fans, they've probably already watched Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House Fun. If they haven't, it'd be great if they could watch it this weekend at the very least. And in celebration of Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun, which is my show, and we'll get back to the bit, we thought it'd be good to get on Michelle, who came to America and did a bit on it, and talk about a Netflix special. We'd do a bit of a tie-in, do some corporate synergy, get full Michael Eisner, the CEO of Disney, do a bit of corporate synergy between my two brands and talk about a Netflix special. Anyway, back to it being Mish's show. I was struggling a little too much with the bit, so
that's okay.
You'd think he was the one that did five interviews today.
Yeah,
honestly.
You would think so.
Men are such babies.
I don't know why you're acting like that.
Have I clearly lost my mind?
I don't think you understand how big my year has been, Zach. I travelled to LA.
Oh, I've snapped. I'm gone.
I filmed an entire fucking...
All right, see you later. Bye-bye.
Walks out of studio.
Zach's checked out.
Onto the road. Bye-bye.
Anyway, I think it's an amazing idea to do something from Netflix because of the Netflix series that either Zach or I did. It's never going to be clear.
And I've got a Netflix series too called Michelle Brazier's Big Old House of Mish Wittrup and Auntie Donna. And it's out now and you can watch it. And if you want to watch it, you can watch it. And if you don't want to watch it, you can watch John Leguizamo's telly program, which is called...
A Latin history for morons.
Okay, yes, we got, yes!
Very good job, Braz.
Yes!
Now,
you're better at this than us.
Now,
I'm God, I'm good.
You're so good. You're so talented, babe.
Thank God I can't dance. I'd be too intimidating to be friends with.
You'd be like a regular Jennifer Lopez.
I'd be a regular Jennifer Lopez. I can't put Michelle as baby. Who would put her in a corner to start with?
I've been tasked with doing the blurb this week, but I need to make it very clear here that... Michelle Wittrup sent me a message on Slack. We're on Slack because we're basically a tech startup. She sent me a message saying, hey, I'm sure you know, but I'm going to say it anyway. Just want to double check you've written the blurb. And I think I responded with, oh, no, and then nothing else.
Yeah. I wrote, it's your turn to do the blurb, just a reminder, because any of you avid fans out there, you might have noticed that we take turns, right?
We take turns. That's a
and
little...
And it was like, okay, Zach, it's your turn. And then there was like a 30-second delay. He started writing something, deleted it, and then I just got one that said, oh, no. No, it didn't. It said, oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Lucky for you, listener, Netflix has little blurbs so you can copy-paste them. Comic and actor John Leguizamo examines the repression of Hispanic culture through American history in his Netflix special, Latin History for Morons, a filmed recording of his latest hit Broadway one-man show.
Who does John Leguizamo play?
John Leguizamo.
Yes, that's right. We are seeing John Leguizamo as John Leguizamo. A beautiful moment in Leguizamo history.
Shining.
It's one of those things, isn't it, where like, you know, linearly in his career, if you are the same age as John Leguizamo and have been following him from the start, you have seen the one-man shows and you've seen John Leguizamo as John Leguizamo, but in this journey, in the Leguizamo-rama project, this is the first time you are seeing, and this is very easy. It's available to so many people around the world. Watch this special. You can watch it. So watch it before you listen to this. But this is the first time on this journey where we're seeing John Leguizamo. It's also the first time we're seeing one of his specials, his one man shows, which he has filmed a lot of them. Spike Lee did one in the early 90s, a HBO special, which I'm very, very excited to watch.
Mm-hmm.
There was a point where I was going to watch them linearly, but then this Netflix piece of corporate synergy came along, so we thought we'd watch that. It's really exciting to see something from his perspective, written by, starring. It's his piece, you know. It's cool to see that.
And that kind of runs throughout the whole thing, really. Like, you can tell how much it means to him.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell how important this show was for him to write and how fucking cool it was that a show like this by him got such a big platform, I reckon.
Yeah.
Yeah. We said yeah.
Are you guys on board?
Yeah, I love that. That's great. That's a great point you've made there. Michelle,
so much.
You make one-woman shows or one-person shows. Can I call it a one-man show? I don't see gender. You make one-man shows.
I do. One-woman show sounds like it's a cabaret about pregnancy, whereas a one-man show just sounds like, oh, Edinburgh Fringe, cool. It's a really different... It's a one-woman show. I can't get out of bed. It's just a different one. You know?
A one-woman show would be written by somebody who has the fan page for Carolyn O'Connor.
Yeah.
That's the person who writes a one-woman show.
Oh, that's so funny. That's the funniest thing you've ever said. Carolyn O'Connor reference here in this moment when we're talking about a Netflix international special is just my favourite thing you've ever done.
Well, and you best believe she'll come back up again for Moulin Rouge.
Oh, yeah.
She's in it.
I forgot she was in Moulin Rouge.
She's in it. If we're going to talk about one-man shows... Fucking queen of one-man shows is Carolyn O'Connor.
You need to explain who Carolyn O'Connor is to our listeners. I'm not one to call out a niche reference.
Sure. Carolyn O'Connor is an Australian actress, and it's very rare that this happens, but she kind of sort of got her name from theatre, which never really happens because theatre doesn't pay and no one goes to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very odd that Carolyn O'Connor would. But what Carolyn O'Connor did, from my memory anyway, like why I know about Carolyn O'Connor, is there is a play that anyone who studies Year 9 or Year 10 drama would have somehow gotten their hands on called Bombshells, which is a series of six monologues of different women doing different shit. Like one is at a wedding, one is at a cactus convention. That's not a lie. There's a woman who is a very Liza Minnelli-esque. There's another one who's dressing up as a cat for a show, that kind of shit. And Carolyn O'Connor was the original in this play that was written by who? Joanna Murray Smith. Oh my God, it's all coming back to me now. I'm in year 10 again. No one will kiss me.
Joanna Murray Smith, just for those who didn't understand that reference, Joanna Murray Smith is an Australian playwright, kind of like your Tennessee Williams, much smaller, much different, more an Australian and a woman and a little bit different, but she is a playwright, which is similar to Tennessee Williams. Please continue with Carolyn O'Connor.
Thank you so much. And Carolyn O'Connor was the original woman who played these six roles in this one play, and it went off and it was amazing, and I think it was really massive, especially for like VCE students and drama students in Melbourne, Sydney. It toured, I'm sure. And then she did a series of other one woman shows at, well, I'm from Melbourne, so at the MTC, and they always sold out and she was huge, and then showed up in Moulin Rouge as the woman who does the sexy tango with the man with the moustache.
There is nothing better than, like, there is no greater thrill than watching a movie and realizing as you're watching it that it was filmed in Australia because people from Melbourne Theatre Company and people from Blue Heelers are popping up next to Ewan McGregor and going, "Say, what are you doing here, Ewan McGregor?" There's like a point in Wolverine where Asha Keddie is like the doctor that's like, "I'm going to put claws in him."
And like, yeah, and in The Matrix. In The Matrix where there's like Ada, I'm not sure what her name is, but the woman from, I want to say Home and Away.
Home and Away,
like, "Hello, I'm a goth." And I was like, "You're from Neighbours."
One of my favourites is I was watching Are You Afraid of the Dark, which is a Guillermo del Toro produced film that was filmed in Melbourne. And the reason I realized that was Gary McDonald's in it. And I'm just like, that's fucking Gary McDonald. Like, how am I ever going to watch this big Hollywood movie starring Katie Holmes and get past the fact that Gary McDonald is in this movie?
That's so funny.
But no Australians in this show, just Leguizamo. It's a one-man show. Back on track. Michelle, you have done one-man shows, as we said.
Yes.
What was it like? What tell us about that experience, if you were to ever film one for a Netflix special. I'd love to hear from your life experience as a one-man show-a-thon person. I'm going to stop there.
I mean, I have done one-man shows, and I've also done a lot of, working with others. So it's a really interesting and different place to come from. But I think it's really nice because you really do have to trust your audience because live theatre is kind of this exchange of energy, and I think that if you have someone on stage with you, then that's already three different sources of energy because you have your audience. But if it's just you, you rely on them for the tennis match, and that's a really nice, intimate kind of trust that you build. I really like that. And also, I mean, I'm a character actor, so I like to put on different hats and do funny things, and that's what I really like about this special is it's... we keep saying special, but I would just call it a one-man show. I think special is possibly a misnomer because people would expect it to be stand-up comedy.
Yeah, a lot of people would, I think, watch this thinking it's a stand-up show, and I think it probably would throw them, it would take them a while to commute with actually what it is. Like, it's funny and there's jokes, but the jokes are there more to service the play. But that's the other thing I think that's really interesting, like, doing, because we all come from live stuff, we all come from theatre and we all do, like, a bit of theatre, a bit of comedy, and there's something that I really love about it that's... He doesn't sort of talk to the language of theatre. He talks, you know, he talks to his audience in a really direct way, and he talks of his real experience. And he acknowledges people in the audience kind of in a bit of a stand-up way. And there's a certain informality to the show, which I really like.
It's a cabaret.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a very cabaret-style performance with no music. That's kind of what it is. And I mean, you could potentially argue because there is a little bit of dance. I mean, you could actually probably potentially argue that, yes, it is a bit of a cabaret. And I imagine there are bits that were probably cut out of it from what we saw, or there would have been nights where it was more of a cabaret. But it is that the breaking down of the fourth wall, that you know, the audience is there with you and you're together, that makes it that kind of energy. And I think that's the best kind of stuff. I don't ever think there's anything that you lose from including them and acknowledging them. I think it's really fun.
Well, what's the point of doing theatre? I mean, this is a wanko. Like, I remember I had someone say to me once, they were like, they came and saw an Arnie Donner show, and they were like, Arnie Donner's my sketch troupe. And they came to my show and they were like, oh, man, they were a theatre director. They were like, oh, man, there's such a vibrant, you have such a vibrant audience and they're so engaged and you connect with them and you, like, talk to them and you drop out of the script and you engage with them. And it was just like, I wish I could see theatre like that. I just want to go see theatre like that. And I was like, well, you just did.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to define theatre a certain way, like, you're never going to see it like that, because it's like, I think there's something to that. And it's interesting as well. Like, I think there's a great point he makes in the show about you know, I'm talking comedy, but, you know, there's this, just this, what happens, what clearly happens with minorities and people without the lived, like, with a different lived experience to me. I thought there was a really profound moment where he talks about, you know, when white people or Europeans make art, it's called fine art, and Latin art or Latinx art is called folk art. And I thought that was just a really fascinating thing that, like, it's interesting. I don't know. There was something about the show that it was very evocative. I've just jumped straight into the deep end.
Well, I think from, like, the way I saw it was that I knew nothing about what he was talking about. Now, I didn't grow up in America, obviously, but the fact that they know nothing is very telling in itself. But I knew nothing about what he was saying, and I found it incredibly informative and very disturbing. And there's obviously, like, without going into it in too much detail, because I don't think I'm the right person to be doing that, but it, very similar, like, within our country, the education around where we came from and where this country came from is just not there. We haven't quite reached that point yet. And it was very interesting to hear from somebody who has lived that experience and how it is for him. Did that make sense? That was very poorly worded.
No,
I think that was finely worded.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
But, yeah, it's hard because you're surprised, and also it's hard. We're Australian and we have this history of the erasure of our Indigenous culture. And for me, someone with, you know, this Spanish side of my family, I have that side of the kind of erasure that I learned about it from watching it too, the erasure from history of the Indigenous people. And I think it's always hard to talk about. It's okay if you can't put words together, because it's uncomfortable. But, you know, that's why this is such a beautiful piece, because the way that he leans into the colloquialisms and he, you know, he flits in and out of Spanish, and it's for so many different people. I think he really opens up the door and is like, let's talk about this. It's not, you know, even though he has a chalkboard and he's dressed as a teacher, it's not a lecture. It's an invitation. It's a celebration of all of this information that he's found as an adult. And I think that's what's gorgeous about it, is it's not somebody standing up and being like, oh, well, just so you know, actually, there's him and they were here before. They did get killed.
Yeah.
Like, it's him just being like, look at this, this is fucked up. Like, just really, and there's un-PC stuff, you know, he impersonates a deaf person that in his family, and we all go, ah, I don't know if that's, oh, okay. But it's like he's appealing to a broad audience, and he's just storytelling, and I think it's the way he speaks about this is so accessible.
And I think that the element of it was never something that he necessarily wanted to touch into until his son was affected, like until his son came to him and said, I can't think of any Latin heroes, that set John Leguizamo off on this path to figure out where his family came from, where the country came from, and the history of that. And it was just a really interesting angle to see that how he came to that and how he came to want to know more about this. And it came as an adult. and all
there's,
that.
There's something I find really interesting. One thing that, like, people have done, this really evoked for me, there's been this sort of logic or this idea that, like, has permeated in certain circles and certain political parties, this idea that history is a science. That history is a concrete thing, that it's not a narrative, it's not an art, it's not a narrative, and it's not a stories that people choose to tell. I think if you look at Australian history and the sort of Australian history, I mean, I grew up learning the history that I was being taught with the best of intentions. When my brain was forming, the Australian history I was taught was one where they chose a narrative not based on the land. They chose a narrative not based on the people that came in. They chose a narrative that I don't know who, but people chose a narrative.
I chose it. I am honestly so sorry.
You're that a racist mistake, historian.
You made a mistake. It was honestly like the worst mistake of my life.
Why did you do that, Michelle?
I don't know. I thought it would be like funny to just like fuck with you guys, but like obviously I've done a lot of damage. I'm really sorry.
There's this point that smart man from QI. Smart man.
Stephen Fry.
He has this bit where he talks about family names and how family names are really interesting because family trees are this really, really complex web where you go back and you're like, you know, you have two parents, then you have four grandparents, and then you have eight great-grandparents. There are so many different stories. There are so many different families and lives and circumstances that have led to you, yet we choose, because of our last name, we choose to take pride in and we choose to engage in one single line through that very complex web. And that's a really great, I think, example of how you can choose a history. History doesn't happen in a narrative. It doesn't happen in a straight line. So when you say, you know, convicts over in England then came to us, when you start the story in England,
that's that
then you are saying, you're telling a story that erases First People, you're telling a story that erases migrants. The Australian story could just as well start in Italy in 1950, or it could just as well start in this land in, like, you know, this land 2,000 years ago, but we choose to start it in England 300 years
ago. It's very interesting. I remember I was living in Tassie, so I would have been in grade one or grade two, and with my year level had to learn a song for assembly, and it was this song about how Australia is a baby country. We're brand new. We're so young. And I was taught my entire life at school that Australia was a young country, that we only started a few hundred years ago. And if you go to the UK, you'll see castles that are like hundreds and hundreds, even thousands of years old. Ooh, wasn't that amazing? And that Australia is this really, really young country. And it wasn't until I was like properly into my late 20s that I was like, I thought about that. And I was like, well, no, we're not. Like, no, we're not. You have chosen to start the story there, and you are choosing to teach kids that this is where our country came from, when we have this very deep history that I had zero education on, zero, my entire time. And I went to, we've touched on this, a very, very pretty private school who had the resources to pay for people to come and tell us our proper history, but they just didn't. It was just not something that was done. There was we'd been told stories about the dream time, but they were that. They were stories, and the history that we were given was this: one day a convict was born. That is what it felt like. And it seems like, surprise, surprise, America isn't much different. Just saying.
Yes. Yes, it is very interesting. I mean, I went to public school in the regional New South Wales. So my experience was a little bit different because we had like lots of Indigenous kids at school. But it was kind of like you could feel the tension at the time. Like listening to the story that John tells about himself sitting at school and being like, why don't you ever talk about us to his teacher? Mm. I watched that. I watched kids be like, hang on. No. Like, that's not what I've heard. And teachers just be like, don't worry about it. we don't want to talk about that. That's politics. And it's like, that's not fun. It's not politics. It's stories. It's lives. And obviously, I mean, we're three left-wing people in a little beautiful bubble, but we could talk about it all day. But it is about what it costs a child when your education erases you and erases your story. And so watching John Leguizamo talk about himself and then talk about his son was beautiful. But then at the same time, even he mentions it. He gets to a point where he says that his son says to him, or no, his daughter says to him that he's erased the female story. Like, you don't hear about women in Latin America, and you don't. He doesn't really talk about them in the story. He mentions that he hasn't spoken about them, but then he doesn't really bring them up. And he doesn't talk about his daughter as much as he talks about his son. So there's always going to be stories that are not told. It's just about finding space to tell them, finding ways to tell them. And of course, like, this story would be too crowded if it was about everyone and trying to be all inclusive. But that's the beauty of it. It's very specific. It is very kind of war-based. But it's also about family. And I think it's a really small story, even though it feels like it spans, a lot of years of history, but it is such a small story and it's such a personal story. And I think that's probably the way that things really, really come into your bones. That's the way that stories start to be real, is if they're small and personal. So it is very, very interesting to watch this show and watch his experience, and especially with his insane skills as a character actor, just doing so many silly voices. It's like he's a year 12 graduate trying to get into drama school, being like, and now I've got this hat on and I'm doing a ball. And then he's like, oh, and I can do this voice too, and like dancing. It's just like, okay, settle down, but also like, fuck yeah, let's do it. Like,
it was like a final monologue for Top Axe.
Exactly. Yes. Like, trying to get your good year 12 score, or it's very funny, or, you know, a graduation from acting school.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I will say, we as we've been making this podcast, I think this is going to be episode 18 or 19.
Oh, wow. We've watched heaps of John Leguizamo movies.
So much. We have 130 to go. we've already learnt that the legs man is an amazing voice actor, because he's Sid, for Christ's sake. He's Sid from Ice Age. If you want to delve deep into the deliciousness that is John Leguizamo's voice acting, this is a very, very, very good piece for you to watch. He does a lot of different characters. My personal favourite was his therapist.
The therapist was really good.
John, and how do you feel about this?
He captures an LA high profile therapist for celebrities so perfectly.
I've got one.
Wow. Yeah, same. That's why I know. And he does that very, very well.
It's that gag that I particularly love that he does. It's spoiler alert. But there's a particular gag. It really, really tickled me, because I go to therapy, I go to a psychologist, and there's something so funny to his, like, no, John, we have to dig deeper. Oh, that's time. It's like,
we have to do it now, John. It has to be now, otherwise you will never, ever, what's the time?
really funny. Tickled me.
There's another really fucking cracker joke. Oh, I did want to point out as well that my partner Tim kept saying Latin history for Marc Maron. just accidentally.
That's the funniest
and
thing.
And that was very funny
to me. Why did he do that?
I don't know how it happened, but he just kept being like, are we watching Latin history for Mark Maron? And I was like, what? And he's like, the Leguizamo. And I was like, what? So the permission Zach. And I was like, do you know,
that's
do you know
very
what you've
funny.
Done?
That's
yeah, he's a good
so
boy.
Funny. That's
it's, very it's, funny.
It just happened.
It's very true. It's very true, I think, though, that this idea that, like, it's just one story. It's just one small story. I think, like, I try to take away, because I think it is a show largely for Latinx American people. Like, the audience for that show is not me. And I think I can say that without, you know, I think sometimes people like use that as an excuse for not liking a thing. They're like, I didn't care for Get Out because it wasn't for me. I'm like, shut up, you're racist. No.
That's what I say about Lord of the Rings, to be fair. I'm like, I don't see myself. I don't see anyone I want to fuck. I guess I like New Zealand. It's not for me. I don't know.
But in a really true sense, like it's a bilingual show. It isn't for me.
But it is, just very quickly, it is a really lovely reminder that not everything is for us.
No, it's
Do you know what I mean? We get everything. We get 99% of everything.
As someone who gets everything and also got this, sucked in.
Yeah.
Can I?
Yes, Braz.
This one was for you. I really love that you're lumping me in the weave. Like, I get 99.9% of things. Joker was for me and me alone, and it got me. I am Joker.
That's okay. We've gotten Hustlers now. We're doing okay. That's going to set us for a good 25 years, I reckon. We got Hustlers.
You got Hustlers.
That's all we need.
And I got the other 25 nominees for Oscar.
Yeah, that's it.
But
we had Bridesmaids, and then we waited a few years. We got Hustlers. We can be funny.
Yeah. We also got Fleabag, but you guys decided to take that as well.
We didn't take Fleabag. We just took her and made her write. Bond, who we are just
Bond.
Holding desperately onto.
Jesus.
No, it's about sexism now.
That's all right. I'm into
love
you know
Bond.
Me.
I'm so excited
movie.
About the new Bond. Yeah. I think that the thing I almost wanted to say was like I remember I had a very profound version of that experience when I saw Nanette.
I was going to say Nanette.
Yeah.
I was like, it's Nanette.
Oh, yeah. And you can talk from the opposite side of that with Nanette. But for me, there was this moment where I was like, this is not a show for me, but fucking hell, it's important for me to see this show. This show is so... it's more important for people to feel heard and seen, but for someone... Like, I needed to understand what it felt like. And there was a moment in that show, when I saw it live, I think it was great, the filmed version, but in that room where I felt the anger and I felt the pain, and I wasn't even close to understanding it or knowing it, but I was like, I'll never get it. And there were moments in this show, I think, that were the same, and I think that it's like, what can I take away from this and what can I take from this show to make it more positive? You know, I can just go, it wasn't for me, bye. But it's like the big thing I can do is say, well, my narratives, my stories, there are politicians, there are people, there are major print publications, Murdoch Press, John Howard, that are trying to tell me...
Sign the petition.
That are trying to tell me that my story, my narrative is the concrete narrative. My narrative is the way things are and everything else is an alternative. And the one thing I needed to do as a white male is step away from this story and go, I've got a narrative. I've got a story. It's one of thousands. It's one of an infinite amount of stories we can tell. And what I need to do in myself and with other people, other white people and other white men is break down this notion that our story is the story, that ours is the neutral, because it's not. It's just one of. And that's something I think I got out of it, and I hope our listeners get out of it if they're not Latinx.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really interesting. I sort of watched Tim have that experience that you're saying right now. Like, I watched him watching it, learning it, enjoying it, but also looking at me and checking in on me and getting joy from my joy, because I was learning stuff that I didn't know about, you know, my history, and just being like, oh, just being filled with these stories and the pride that comes from that. I think there's something really powerful in other people watching that happen. You can see it in the audience. You can see there are audience members there that are just so proud of where they're from. You know, like, I don't know. It's such a challenge to the culture over there, because it is so deeply entrenched in police powers, in all kinds of stuff. It's hard to be Latinx, especially over there, where they should be, where they're from, like, where it should be okay. It's fucking awful. So to see that joy and to see the people who it is for watch that and recognize this is for me, finally something for me that isn't, you know, just a sexy lady in hoop earrings or you know, a guy who repairs cars and deals drugs on the side, like, it's fantastic. It's so, so powerful.
You could feel the love and appreciation that that audience had for John. And it wasn't just that they were laughing at his jokes because he did a couple of funny things, or they went, ooh, when he said something that, like, what might have been a little bit jarring. There was a genuine, love and appreciation for what he was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a meaningful show, which is really good, which is why it's so good that it's so accessible. Yeah, I really liked the show. But it's also funny because it's like, it did, at the same time, it did feel kind of like really fresh, like it wasn't that run in, and some of the jokes would have changed over time, and I'm sure that they probably did. But it was really good, and I love the, like, you know, taking your pants off behind the chalkboard and everyone can see the pants half of you. Like, that's funny stuff. Yeah, I like that clowny.
And then getting your pants to put them back on by opening up
from a drawer.
From a drawer.
When he put his hand on that drawer, and I was like, please be pants. And it was pants. I was like, yeah.
That's good comedy, that.
Almost to, like, pull it out of the series is this. I'm such a lover of a show with a big budget, but it's a one-man show. So, like, this notion of, like, this notion of, like, it could be done as a black box production.
Yes.
But it had, like, literally someone would have sat down with him and said, listen, we're in a Broadway theatre, we're charging a lot for tickets, we can have a rotating stage, we can have Les Mis style shit, what do you want? And that balance of, like, I want it to feel, you know, small and intimate. But fuck, if you can get me another pair of pants in that drawer, that'd be sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will say this about it as well, like, the way it was shot. So we've all done theatre. We all come from a bit of theatre, all that stuff. It's my first love and my big love and first love and first passion was theatre. And a lot of people haven't seen a lot of theatre, and they're like, they don't get it and they don't really see the appeal of it, and they go to the movies every weekend but they don't come and see theatre. And it's that idea of not understanding what the big appeal is about theatre. I feel like the way this Netflix special was shot, you really get the essence of what is so amazing about live theatre, especially one-on-one, that kind of idea of a cabaret or a one-man show. Like, it really does capture for me the love and the vibe of live theatre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a real challenge. I love that moment in, let's Beyonce, another Netflix reference, Beyonce's the movie about it's the combination of her tour? Performance at Coachella plus the making of the performance of Coachella.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the name of the film is. But there's a point in it where, like, she's really, really mad and she's like, this feels amazing on stage. This feels amazing for an audience, but I want to capture that for the people watching the live stream on Twitter. And I think there's that's the thing. I think there'll be enough of these specials. There's so many of them that we can, like, dig into them as we go. But I'm fascinated by how a special is filmed. Oh, it's something so I've good. Had. I have to question in my own work. It's like, how it is an extra layer, and it is it's sort of trying to like that this is a film. This is its own piece of content. It is different from the live show he did on Broadway. It's a recording of that, and how they film it and how they capture it is makes it slightly different, I think. And there's sometimes...
Yeah, just little things like it's lighter in the theatre. You can see there's like a light on the audience that wouldn't normally be there. Things like that. Like, and also noticing like there are things that are filmed on different nights because there are things on the chalkboard that have, you know, lowercase a's when there were capital a's there before, which Tim was noticing again. He's very good at continuity. I'm bad at it. But it's really interesting because I'm looking, we did Double Denim in the past, but today in the future. We're doing Double Denim, which is our third show, which is a theatre show set in a live TV show, and now we're filming it.
Mm.
So it's this kind of two-step process of, like, what do we film? How do we film it? Do we film it as if we're pretending we're in a TV studio, or do we just take advantage of the fact that we actually are in a TV studio? Really thinking about how that audience receives it is really interesting. There's so much stuff like that. And it's been an incredible year for that, for how theatre is filmed and how things translate onto screen because of lockdowns and coronavirus. And we've all had to kind of figure that out. And I think...
I saw a filmed stand-up bit that you did and I watched it on Zoom. This was like right in the bang spack.
He touched me on the bang spack.
It's not me right bang spack. You lay off my bang spack, you naughty boy.
All you do is keep looking at my bang spack. Have you got a problem? Have you got a problem with my bang spack? My bang spack's just fine. Anyway, right in the middle of lockdown, and Adam Hills was hosting it. And this story is completely off topic, I logged into the Zoom, somehow ended up in a two-on-one chat with Adam Hills.
I remember that I was watching this backstage and I was like, what's happened here?
It was Lena Moon and I, and I don't know how it happened, but then the three of us, Mish Witchrup, me, Lena Moon, good friend, and Adam Hills were just Zooming together. I just wanted to say that. It's a bit of a weird flex.
It's a weird year.
Think about it. We've got, you can't have a wedding with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
We've got no nightclubs. We've got golf is off the cards. We've got Zooming with Adam Hills. It's a weird fucking year.
It's a weird year.
It's a crazy, crazy time. On that note, how many Leguizamos?
Zach, you go first.
Oh, my God. You've thrown me a curveball there. I was struggling. Leguizamos, I mean, my question is this. How can you give a one-man show written by and starring John Leguizamo any less than five Leguizamos?
And my answer to that question is I don't know. That's why I asked you to go first.
I think I would like to go first.
Oh, yes, Braz, please.
I think he dances.
Yeah.
He does 1,000 different characters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's got the set of Rent and he's got a chalkboard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All he plays himself and his entire family.
Mm-hmm.
This is a five Leguizamo situation.
Clap, 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 clap. My issue is less with the fact that I don't want to get, like, I want, like, I liked this, I love this special, I thought it was really good, I thought it was really funny. My struggle is how I can talk to why it, I mean, it just is a fight, like, it's, like, the, all of
you
these
set
specials,
up the scale. This is your fault.
No, I know. And usually the game is, ooh, how do you do it? Like last, the week before last we had, Miami Vice, and Vincent D'Onofrio was in it, and we're like, love surely him. Vincent D'Onofrio is worth a couple of Leguizamos. Like, what is the Leguizamo score for someone who isn't Leguizamo but really does quench a large part of the Leguizamo thirst?
Well, I don't think you could do that. I didn't know that was part of the scoring system.
Well, this is my point, Michelle.
Because the dog is worth 5 Leguizamos in John Wick, and we did John Wick, so...
But that would be... No, but hold on. You guys are fucking up the system.
Are we?
If the John Wick... If I was like, how many dogs do you give John Wick? You give it 5 dogs.
Well, how many Vincent D'Onofrio's do you give Miami Vice?
In Miami Vice, that was a 5 Vincent D'Onofrio.
No, no. 5 Vincent D'Onofrio is...
Full Metal Jacket.
Full Metal Jacket. Although that's probably 4.5 because he's only in the first hour.
Yeah, but it's so D'Onofrio.
That's true. Maybe Thumbsucker because you get to see a different side of D'Onofrio.
True.
My issue here is there's no thought process. I can't get to 5 Leguizamos because it just is by virtue of what it is. All of his one-man shows will be 5 Leguizamos, surely.
Maybe that's okay.
Yeah, and I think that's okay. So, Zach, how many Leguizamos are you giving it?
Oh, Mish, here it goes.
Yeah? Yeah.
I give it 5 Leguizamos.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so we've got one 5-star. We've got Braz gave 5
Very
Leguizamos.
Very smoothly done.
Thank you. Shut the fuck up.
I'm fucked up so many times.
Tom, if you could insert some sort of suspense building music here.
Oh, poor Tom.
And I'm so sorry, Tom, if this is a pain in the ass. I'm so sorry.
Also, to our listeners,
I'm so sorry if we've forgotten to ask Tom to do this. And if there is no suspenseful music playing now, it's either I forgot, Tom's in the middle of releasing a Netflix series.
I've got the piano here. Did you want me to?
Yeah. Will you be able to get it?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Will it come through? Because that's so much better.
Tom, be on pause, please.
Tom, you don't have to do the music anymore.
It's loud.
Is it suspenseful or do you want like?
What we need, I'm going to guess here.
In a wood.
I'm going to guess.
You're in a wood in the mist.
But be ready to go from minor to major. Are we going to say that?
Can you bring the volume down a bit?
And be ready. Are you able to flip this?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Sorry, Tom, as you were. Okay. We have Braz, who's given 5 Leguizamos. That's huge.
Oh, my God.
We've had Zach that has given 5 Leguizamos. This is also huge.
Oh, wow.
Not since the days of Sesame Street has Zach given a 5 Leguizamo. Now, based on how Leguizamo-y this was, I, Mish Wittrup of Mission Zach's Leguizamorama and Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun, I am also giving 5 Leguizamos. That's jaunty.
That's jaunty
now,
because
that means
now. Yeah, get ready, Tom. Get ready
means,
here, Tom. Tom, we need you to get ready with the Leguizamo theme tune. We open with it, but Tom, we really need you to drop this because what does that mean, Mish? Let's try and say this in unison. That means we have our first
Leguizamorama. Oh my god! This is
Mission Zachy's listening right now. Congratulations.
This is for you. Our first ever full Leguizamorama.
I don't know if we set this up in a podcast, but we always knew in our hearts the first time that something was to get 5 Leguizamos across the board, that would be declared the Leguizamorama. So congratulations to Latin History for Morons and every single one-man show he does, he's done, because you are the first official Leguizamorama.
Oh, it's big. I'd like to thank our sponsors. We've got One Pot Pasta. We have Dr. Phil.
Season
we have
one
to make One Pot Pasta, by the way, on
Instagram. Yeah, we
Instagram.
Still have to do that. I still haven't done that. But you best believe that since the last time you were on, which was John Wick, we're still talking about One Pot Pasta.
Okay, fantastic.
We haven't stopped. Okay, I'm going to quickly read out a review that we've gotten. Thank you to everyone who jumps on to the podcast and leaves us a 5-star review.
I feel really sorry for this person. I'm so sorry. I just want to apologize in advance. Usually you get your review read. It's a really exciting thing, but now you're just bringing the mood down because we were at a Leguizamorama, but we're going to do it for you, and we're going to try and keep the energy up for you.
Now, this is actually a DM. This is someone who slipped into our little DM, Zach.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. If you guys remember, a few episodes ago, we did a movie called Stealing Cars, which was about stealing cars.
Yeah.
And in that movie, the character that isn't that famous actor that we all love, forgotten his name.
John Leguizamo.
No. Taron Egerton.
Oh, yes. Not Taron Egerton.
Not Taron Egerton falls in love with the nurse who is kind of like the sick bay lady. Yeah. And I put it out to you guys. I was like, hey, if any of you have ever fallen in love with your sick bay lady, please hit us up.
Also and fitting because Michelle played a sick bay lady in one of Auntie Donna's sketches and then a sports doctor in its spiritual and literal sequel. But you've played a sick bay lady, so I think this is a fitting time to reward someone for slipping into our DMs rather than giving us 5 stars.
Oh, that's a very nice connection that you made. And also, Braz, amazing. It was so funny. Haven't seen it yet because we're recording this a week in advance, but it's so funny.
If you as a listener haven't seen it yet, please just chuck it on just Netflix, give it a play.
See it.
You don't even need to watch it. Just put it on.
Press play. All right, Mish, I'd love to hear this DM.
We got this from someone named Finn, and I thought it was very funny. So this
I wonder if it's my
DMs.
Nephew, Finn.
Maybe. Mm. I won't give their last name because I didn't ask express permission to do this.
That's great.
So
good for you.
We'll call him Tin.
Okay.
My school had enough money to afford a sick bay lady. I did not have romantic feelings for her, but there were certainly rumours similar to that. I was 14 at school and got knocked unconscious by a 17-year-old because I called him an ugly ginger cunt. He was uglier on the inside. He hit me from behind afterwards, but that's neither here nor there. Afterwards, the sick bay lady attended to me and checked if I was breathing, which led to everyone claiming the sick bay lady pashed me fully on the mouth. Mm-hmm. People filmed it. Where it was very close, she put her ear near my mouth, which somehow everybody interpreted as a make-out sesh. All boys school. Really healthy and cool environment.
You know,
I hate all boys schools so much.
It's a bit of a.
Hate them.
I'm getting more political. I'm so deeply getting over like being vague in my politics. But I'm very open in my hatred of single gender schools because of shit like this.
Braz, thank you so much for joining us on our podcast yet again. You are our favourite human being. So when this podcast comes out, you last week did a show. Tell us all about it because it's not over for everyone.
Is it available?
Okay, we did a live
show. Yeah.
It is available to watch. You can stream it. You can find the link on my Instagram, or if you Google SOS Presents, Stupid Old Studios Presents Double Denim, a very fancy dinner party. Mm-hmm. You can watch the video. It's our third show, but you don't need to have seen the first two. It's a little bit different because, you know, obviously the show has changed and evolved in the last year or so. But if you have seen it before and you loved it, get your family to watch it. It's really fun, and I'm really excited that we're filming it. I was rehearsing for it today. I fucking love working with Laura. She's so funny. It's just us trying to make each other laugh, and we succeed. It's a great time.
Double Denim is so funny.
We sold it. The show sold out completely. Like, there was no way you could get a ticket when it was out, and we didn't do return season. So this is like a good opportunity. And if you're around the world, you can watch it wherever.
What I would say is if you're a listener and if you came to us because you're a fan of John Leguizamo, I can't help you. I mean, you clearly like one-man shows, and this is a two woman show, so it's close. What I would say is
two women equals one man.
No, I didn't say that. Fucking please
Zach
don't.
Said it.
Please don't
Zach
quote
said.
Me on that. Oh no,
Zach,
I don't know about you guys, but I heard Zach say, "Oh, two in the bush, one in the man."
Oh no, I've been cancelled. what I was going to say was a lot of people don't realise this. A lot of people that maybe view us internationally or don't watch a lot of live comedy beyond Auntie Donna. If you have come to us because you're a fan of Auntie Donna, what I would say is Auntie Donna is of a genre. Auntie Donna is of a school of comedy. We went to the same school as everyone at Double Denim, but we're of a school of comedy. I can unequivocally say if you like Auntie Donna and you haven't heard of Double Denim, you will like Double Denim. We come from the same school. We're the same genre. So do check it out. If you've come to us for other reasons and you're like, oh, I like that Mission Zach's Leg was Amarama, but I hate Auntie Donna.
That's you weird. Won't like, that's, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
That's weird, but.
Like, that's weird. That is
that's
weird.
That's weird. You're weird.
Unless it's because you like the Too Many Men, then yeah. You could watch Double Denim. But yeah. If that's that would be the only acceptable like reason for not liking Auntie Donna but liking Double Denim because it's the same silliness.
Is that a fair thing? Are you happy for me to throw you under the bus as saying if you don't like Auntie Donna, you probably won't like Double Denim? Is that an okay thing to say?
Unless you don't like Auntie Donna, but you like me because of my vagina, well, there's two of them.
Two. We have two full vaginas.
Two full vaginas.
Two full. They're full. Full of secrets.
All right, I think that's enough. That's enough. Bye. No, thanks so much for listening, guys. Please leave us a review if you can and jump onto our Instagram, which is at Mission Zach, or jump onto Michelle Brazier's Instagram, which is at Michelle Brazier. It's full of a good selfie. It's great.
Every now and then I post like a hot pic and then like an undermining funny caption.
You make me feel like it's okay when I post a thirst trap. You know, when I see your thirst traps, I'm like, same.
I think I've gone down the selfie route with silly caption because of you as well, Michelle Brazier.
It's great. It's good. It's good to remind people, casting agents, that you are actually hot even though you're funny. So
that's important. Right.
All they need to do is just put that camera up a little bit and they
just
can
put it up. Just put it. We've all been, we're expanding in COVID. Just put it up.
There's an excellent filter called Renegade.
There's an excellent filter called Renegade. All you need is a slight tilt up of your camera, right? Renegade filter, you're fucking banging. You got this. You too can be as hot as Zach, Michelle, and I.
Maybe not using the filter. I like my freckles. Yeah. They always disappear.
Braz doesn't need a filter.
I've got perfect skin.
All right, thank you so much.
Mish Wittrup has perfect skin.
Oh, hush.
All right, bye.
Bye. Bye. Love you all. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.